This is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower. And our stories are written especially for people learning English. Welcome to 2022. I hope everyone starts the new year happy and healthy. We begin our program today with the Education Report. Dan Friedel will talk about an English test that is gaining support, but also raising some questions. I will return with words and their stories. Gregory Stockel brings us a story about the state of media in Afghanistan. Jill Robbins talks about a Portuguese man who crossed the Atlantic using a very strange method. We will finish our 30 minutes together with John Russell. But first, the Education Report.
You may know Duolingo as an app on your mobile phone to learn languages, including English. But the company recently launched an English test that it hopes will gain more acceptance, like the long-established TOEFL and IELTS. TOEFL is an English test from the American organization Educational Testing Service, and IELTS is owned by the British Council and others. Duolingo was founded in 2011 by Luis Von Ahn, a professor at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, along with one of his students. The company launched its Duolingo app a year later. It now provides learning instruction for over 40 languages. Von Ahn grew up in the Central American country of Guatemala. The company said he had to travel to neighboring El Salvador for an English test while applying to universities in the United States. With that experience, he wanted to create a test so more students could prove their English ability. And the Duolingo English Test, DET, came out in 2016. Jennifer Dewar works for Duolingo. She helps universities around the world understand how the Duolingo test can measure students' English language skills.
For me, when I encountered the Duolingo English test, I saw it as a real solution and as a real tool that could democratize access to education for students around the world.
Dewar said hundreds of universities had already accepted the Duolingo test before the COVID-19 pandemic closed many testing centers. Since then, the number grew to almost 2,000 around the world. The schools included well-known universities like Georgetown, Caltech, and Yale. Florida State University in Tallahassee, Florida, is one of the schools that is trying out Duolingo's test. Patrick Kennel is director of the university's Center for Intensive English Studies. He is excited about the new ideas Duolingo brought to English testing, but he is not sure whether it measures English skills as well as the traditional tests. Is it valid for what it says it measures? He asked. He also wondered if students who use their score on the DET to get into a university will have trouble keeping up in the classroom. Only time will tell, he added. The Duolingo test requires students to fill in missing letters in groups of words. Listen and choose whether the word they hear is English or made up. Write short answers to questions. And listen to a sentence and write it word for word. Test takers are also required to speak English into their computer microphone about several subjects. Most questions have a time limit, and the test, which costs $49, takes less than 1 hour to complete. Because Duolingo's test can be taken by a student at home, some universities are concerned that it might be easy to cheat, but Duolingo says it is always working to make sure that students cannot. The company also works on security because it does not want a student who got a good score on the DET to arrive at school and not be able to speak English as well as their score showed. Before the online test starts, students must show their identification paper or passport and take a photo of themselves. If the two photos do not look the same, a reviewer will question the test results. Since Duolingo's test is adaptive, meaning the next question depends on the answer to the current question, no one has ever taken the same test as another person. Bassem Baig is Duolingo's head of security. He said, no matter what testing companies do, some people probably cheat and do not get caught. Most universities want students to score close to 120 points on the DET. The top scores will be around 150. But even people who grew up speaking English do not always score that high. Burr Settles is one of the test creators at Duolingo. He said, Duolingo aims to make its test a good simulation of how people speak English in real life.
We want the test to be something that is fun and natural to take. And at the same time, you're better off learning the language than to, like, learn how to take the test.
In the year ending on July 31st, 2021, Duolingo said most test takers came from India, China, and the U.S. Kennel compared the DET to tests that one might give an athlete. He said, just because a soccer player can run fast or kick the ball well, it does not mean that player will be as good as Lionel Messi. The player must understand the game, work with teammates, and fit into the team's system. In the same way, he said, a college student needs to be able to read difficult books, listen to lessons, write papers, and join class discussions in English. The IELTS and TOEFL, Kennel said, measure those skills better since they simulate what students will do in a university classroom. Bo Benson works with international students who are thinking of coming to Northeastern University in Boston. The school has over 10,000 international students each year. He thinks the Duolingo test does a good job of showing that a student can speak English well enough to take classes in the U.S.
We just need something that we can trust, something that's going to be fast, something that we don't need to question, that's not going to slow us down. And then Duolingo's been great in that sense.
Regardless of the acceptance rate for the Duolingo English test, it has already made an impact. Earlier this year, ETS, the maker of TOEFL, launched a shorter, less costly test called TOEFL Essentials. Florida State's Kennel, however, warned that no English test is perfect.
Tests don't tell it all, definitely. We've had students come to us, they've gotten 100 on the TOEFL, they get started in their classes, and they can't do it. The English test is just a piece of the whole package.
I'm Dan Friedel.
Thanks, Dan. And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. At the beginning of a new year, some people like to start with a clean slate. They like to start fresh. Sometimes that involves simply cleaning your house and getting rid of things you do not need. Some things you can give away to others or donate. Other things without value or use are trash. And so trash is our topic for today. After we talk about some trash expressions, you will hear them used in a conversation. In American English, we have other words for trash, such as garbage and rubbish. They all mean the same thing. Sometimes we use them interchangeably in expressions, but sometimes we don't. Let's begin with this expression, trash talk. Trash talk is insulting speech aimed at a person or a group. Trash talk is very common in sports. Members of one team could trash talk to members of another team. For example, in baseball, if a player hits the ball poorly, the other team might say, "My 80-year-old grandmother hits harder than that." The term trash talk is a set expression, so we do not say garbage talk or rubbish talk. Trash talk has another meaning. It can mean meaningless or false talk. We also call that kind of trash talk a load of nonsense. In that case, you could say that trash talk is a load of rubbish or a load of garbage. Those all work and sound natural. Here is another expression that uses the words rather well. Good riddance to bad rubbish. We say good riddance as a way of saying goodbye to something bad that will not be missed. So good riddance to bad rubbish means it is better for everyone that the person or thing is leaving. We could also say good riddance to bad garbage. However, good riddance to bad trash does not sound right, so we do not use trash in that expression. Now, there are other expressions that use garbage and trash, but not rubbish. A raccoon is an animal known for getting into people's trash cans and stealing their garbage. The black color around the eyes makes a raccoon look like a bandit or a robber. So a funny name for a raccoon is either trash bandit or garbage bandit. We do not, however, call it a rubbish bandit. Again, it just doesn't sound right. The same thing happens when a person uses bad language. We say he has a garbage mouth or she has a trash mouth. Again, we do not say rubbish mouth. Our last expression for today is garbage in, garbage out. This means if something is of bad quality or done incorrectly, it most likely will produce poor results. In computing, you might hear an engineer say garbage in or bad codes will produce garbage out or poor computer programs. But you can use it for other situations as well. For example, we often say garbage in, garbage out as a warning to eat healthy food. If you put bad food in your body, your energy and physical abilities will be affected. For this expression, it is common to use garbage. Others will understand you if you say rubbish in, rubbish out, or trash in, trash out. But they don't sound as natural as garbage in, garbage out. Now, as promised, let's hear two friends use some of these expressions.
How was the basketball game last night? Did your team win?
We did. We beat the other team by like 20 points.
Wow. You creamed them. What happened? Did they forget how to play?
They said they didn't practice at all. So, you know what they say, garbage in, garbage out.
Well, win or lose, it sounds like you had fun.
We did. The second best thing about the game was all the trash talking. We got very creative with our insults.
Didn't the other team get mad?
Nah, it's all in good fun. They were doing their own trash talking. Soon we were competing over who had the best insults.
That does sound fun, especially if no one takes it personally.
Well, one guy on the other team did. He kept dropping the ball. So we called him Butterhands.
I'm guessing he didn't like that.
No, he didn't. He actually left the game. But his teammates didn't seem to care. All they said was, good riddance to bad rubbish.
Now, that is really trashy trash talk.
And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Hopefully using our content at VOA Learning English is not garbage in, garbage out. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo. Next up is Gregory Stockel.
A recent survey found that at least 40% of media agencies in Afghanistan have disappeared since Taliban militants took control of the country. More than 80% of women reporters have lost their jobs as well. The group Reporters Without Borders, or RSF, led the study with its local partner, the Afghan Independent Journalists Association, or AIJA. It released updated findings on December 21st. It said that the environment for reporters in the country has become extremely fraught since the Taliban took over on August 15th. The survey found of the 543 media agencies in Afghanistan at the start of the summer, only 312 were still operating at the end of November. More than 6,400 reporters and media workers have lost their jobs since August 15th. The survey also found that 84% of women have lost their jobs compared to 52% of men. There are no working women reporters in 15 of Afghanistan's 34 provinces. For example, the northern province of Jowzjan used to have 19 media agencies employing 112 women. The survey said now, none of the 12 media agencies still operating is employing a woman. The Taliban in many places have reportedly demanded that local media agencies not employ any women reporters. Most of the Afghan provinces had at least 10 privately owned media agencies just 4 months ago. Now, some areas have almost no local media. The study found that the area of the capital, Kabul, has lost 51% of its media agencies. Of the 148 counted before August 15th, only 72 are still operating. Of the 1,100 women reporters and media workers in Kabul at the start of August, only 320 are now working. Hundreds of journalists have left Afghanistan out of fear of Taliban attacks or because of problems with working under Taliban rule. The Taliban has issued a set of journalism rules. They include requiring agreement with the Taliban's ideas about Islamic law. The survey described the rules as dangerous. It said they open the way to speech restrictions and take away independence from journalists. Taliban officials deny that they are behind cases of violence or media restrictions. Reporters Without Borders quoted Taliban spokesman Zabila Mujahid, who was asked about some 40 cases of violence against journalists since August 15th. Mujahid said efforts are being made to train and control the actions of Taliban security forces. Media agencies are not making money since the Taliban took control. That also has led to the reduction in media workers. Many agencies were receiving government and international money before the takeover. Beyond the numbers, the closure of nearly half of the country's media and the loss of more than 6,000 jobs are a disaster for press freedom, AIJA Executive Director Hojatullah Mujahdadi said. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Thanks, Gregory. Now Jill Robbins brings us an interesting story of transportation from Portugal.
A Portuguese man has crossed the Atlantic Ocean in a small boat, powered only by the sun and wind. He used kites to move the boat and solar power to use lights and equipment on the boat. Francisco Lufinha arrived on the island of Martinique on December 20th. He hopes his trip will earn him a Guinness World Record for fastest solo Atlantic crossing by kite boat. He also hopes his trip will help people understand the need to protect the oceans. The kite-powered boat reached top speeds of over 30 kilometers per hour. Lufinha traveled 6,400 kilometers in 25 days. The 38-year-old set out from Cascais near Lisbon, Portugal, on November 3rd and arrived on the Caribbean island of Martinique on December 20th. Lufinha was not at sea for all that time, however. He made a planned stop at the Canary Islands on November 8th. He had to stay longer than planned because of strong winds. He remained there until November 30th. Lufinha made the crossing completely alone in a 7.2 meter long and 5.6 meter wide trimaran. This kind of boat has three long, thin parts, with a small room for sleeping and shelter. Lufinha used a hand pump to produce water for drinking and cooking. He said, "To produce water, I need to use this water maker. I have two of these, which I can pump, and every hour I can make around 4 liters of water. The water pump has a special filter to remove salt from the seawater. Lufinia used the water to add to dried food he carried with him on the boat. He called his trip a big learning experience. It was a big test of my resilience. I learned a lot. I learned most of all to look at my problems relatively. I had so many problems all of the time. Kites getting torn, kites exploding. And the only way to not suffer was to think, it could be worse. Supporters followed Lufinia's trip on his Facebook page. The main sponsor that supported him during his trip was the energy company EDP. He said his way of thinking during the difficult crossing helped him to get through it hour by hour, day by day, week by week, until I got here to the Caribbean and finished this EDP Atlantic mission. I'm Jill Robbins.
Thanks, Jill. Our last story today comes from John Russell.
A small but growing movement is trying to find a way to deal with the problem of diabetes in the United States. This movement is made up of special programs, doctors, hospitals, and health officials that are concerned about increasing evidence that the food system in the United States is making people sick. The food system has made it easier and less costly for people to eat too many processed foods. A Reuters News Agency report earlier this year suggested that diabetes represents a major public health failure in the United States. The number of Americans with the disease has grown quickly in recent decades, even though spending on new treatments has increased as well. Diet, or the foods that people eat, plays an important part in the life and health of people with diabetes. Yet it is rarely dealt with in the U.S. healthcare system. Government programs, insurers, and medical providers spend billions of dollars on costly medications, operations, and medical devices to treat patients. Devin Clatell is the Rockefeller Foundation's Managing Director of Food Initiatives. Clatell said that the U.S. has underinvested, meaning not spent enough time and effort, in food and nutrition within the healthcare sector. She added, "There is overwhelming evidence that our food system is making lots of us sick. Poor diets, along with less active lifestyles, are directly linked to type 2 diabetes, the most common form of the disease. Highly processed foods full of sugars and fats play a part in the high blood sugar levels and obesity that often lead to type 2. Of the estimated 34 million Americans with diabetes, about 95% are type 2. About 1.6 million Americans have type 1 diabetes, an autoimmune disease of unknown cause that requires lifelong insulin shots. Unlike type 1 patients, those with type 2 diabetes may be able to manage or reduce the severity of their illness through diet and exercise, greatly reducing the risk of very bad health problems. With the right diet, some may even be able to live without medication. A small number of special programs seek to make it easier for patients to eat right. These programs take many forms. In Pennsylvania, doctors write diabetes patients prescriptions for healthy food to be filled at food pharmacies that look like small grocery stores. In Santa Barbara, California, a clinic offers bags of fresh food every week to dozens of diabetes patients. I'm John Russell.
Thank you, John. And that's our program for today. Thanks for listening, and happy 2022. Some content in this program was provided by the Associated Press or Reuters News Agency. And don't forget to join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Anna Mateo.